Welcome to the Choose to Be podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Where healing begins with you, and we're here to support you along the way.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us on the Choose to Be podcast. We are answering a common question from many of you. As we've been talking a little bit more about emotions and feeling your feelings, talking about the importance of not moralizing our emotions, meaning we don't make them wrong, bad, good. Because if we do that, then we essentially are telling ourselves that we are good, bad, right, wrong when we feel these emotions. Alana put out an episode that also helps us understand with ketamine getting really more into the body. I know we've said this so many times, Alana, this recommendation, but if you have not heard of it or read it yet, Body Keeps the Score. For those of you who are ready, trigger warning, I got to put it out there. It is intense, but an absolute must at some point in your journey to read Body Keeps the Score. We're going to touch on that a little bit today. It's why I recommended that one, because when I'm working with a client on the emotional piece, the somatic healing, I'll say things like, okay, well, where is that in your body? They're cognitively talking and cognitively even feeling the anger, the frustration, the sad, the grief, the hurt. When I say, where is that showing up for you somatically in your body? There tends to be, especially if someone isn't used to that, there tends to be this little moment of say, what? What are you talking about? I've had clients ask, what do you mean, Amy, when you say in the body? What does that actually mean? So I thought we'd answer that question today. What does it mean when we say, and I know we've said this so many times on our podcast, Alana, feel that in the body. What are we talking about there? There's so much just somatic healing. It's amazing. I just did a supervision with Brain Spotting. We talked about the somatic memory, and it is so nuanced and beautiful and amazing, and I love it. It definitely takes practice when you have been so disconnected to your body and haven't felt or even been taught. Mm-hmm. You haven't been taught to pay attention to your body. And then trauma disconnects you from your body. So makes sense why many of you are like, yeah, I get it. What does that even mean? What does in your body mean? Alana, what does it mean?
I was waiting for your next insightful thought. Well, I feel like therapy, when most people start therapy, like therapy 101 is about learning how to feel feelings. For the majority of people, no matter what brings them into therapy, that kind of a lot of times is therapy 101. So I think that it is fitting that you did the episode where you talked all about the feelings, and feelings aren't good or bad. And we need to stop moralizing them and just allow them to be. And then last time we did an episode talking more about ketamine specifically, but the value of somatic healing. So it's interesting because when you say to get in the body, I see clients do one of two things typically. If I say, like, where do you feel that in your body? And I see this male and females alike. They either go, well, I feel it everywhere, meaning that feeling is so intense that they don't actually know how to recognize it other than they have just fully embodied and it's become all of them, which then we have to slow that process down and recognize that feelings are feelings is something that comes and goes. But our whole body isn't actually experiencing it, but we haven't learned how to recognize that. So almost this over experience where it's so much I can't even differentiate. It's just I've completely embodied all of the pain, or the complete disassociation, like you said, where I've disconnected so much. And I tend to see this more in males or people who are like me, where I tend to be really analytical. And so it's really easy to, I can talk about feelings, but that's different than actually feeling and experiencing. And that was one thing that when I really dove into therapy that I learned about myself is I can talk about feelings all day long. I can tell someone I feel really sad about this. And I can use very descriptive, flowerful words that people can be like, oh, wow, she's really feeling it. But I can do all of that with all of that emotion being tucked really, really nice and safe in a box. I'll just say that's what I do on this podcast is I can show up and I can talk about hard and I can really go in the depths and I can slow it down. And you might think, whoa, she is really in the feeling. And sometimes I am, but in a podcast or in a lot of areas of my life, I can talk about them, but it's very different than actually allowing myself to feel and to sit in that discomfort and then allow that emotion to move through me. Two very different things.
It's two way different things. And it starts with that awareness of just being aware of the body and how the different sensations, as small as they might be, the more we pay attention to it. Now, I'm going to give you an example. And my sweet husband luckily doesn't listen to any of these podcasts I want to watch.
I'm going to say, hey, Scott.
I know, right? Don't warn him, Alana. But no, this is actually cute and funny. But he came into my office after I gotten done with a client and I happened to just be brain spotting this client. So I was in the mode. Now, granted, we are not ethically encouraged to brain spot family members and I don't. And Scott came into my office a little activated and he was just talking and I'm watching as he's talking and I'm noticing his eyes and I'm seeing where they're drifting. And I just said, hey, hold that spot for me. And so I was doing a little gaze spotting with him and trying to get him to go into the body with this because Scott is very much an overthinker. He lives in that prefrontal cortex and really likes it there. Feels very comfortable there. I had him gaze and hold a brain spot that I noticed something happening and then asked him to get into his body. I said, what are you noticing in your body? And he was trying. Long story short, I said, okay, stop. I'm done. I'm not going to go any further with you, but I'm definitely noticing something there. Maybe you bring that to your therapist. I was trying to remain ethical. And the funny part is he looks at me and he goes, okay, I know what you were trying to do, but I'm just wondering, is it really all in the body? Is it really like, when you feel like when I think something and when, but it's really in the body. Laughing so hard. And I was like, it really is in the body, honey.
Yes.
All of these things really do show up. And it was just cute. And then fast forward to yesterday, he comes in the kitchen. He goes, so that whole feel your feelings and notice your body stuff, which I had to laugh at. I said, oh, you mean like, emotional maturity stuff. He's like, yeah, which he is actually as one, very emotionally mature. But he goes, so I noticed something when I went and got the mail yesterday. I pulled out the envelope that said HOA. Now, Scott hates HOA, and that's a whole other podcast episode. But he said that when he noticed the envelope saying HOA, he said, I noticed that my hands got tight and to squeeze the envelope. I noticed that my jaw started to get tight. He started to notice the tiny sensations in his body and how they changed and shifted as he held the envelope and saw just HOA. And as he noticed his body, then he could recognize his thoughts. And of course, his thoughts are, I hate the HOA. And then he could feel the feelings. And that is an example right there of what we're talking about. Thank you, Scott, for letting me use you. But that's a great example of what I'm talking about in terms of getting in the body. He got in his body because he paid attention to the tiniest shift in that moment when he saw the HOA letter.
I love that example. And it happens to us all the time.
All the time.
All day long. Like your body is constantly sending you information and the body doesn't lie. I will have a client in front of me and they will say something to me and I'm constantly watching. Is their head shaking or is their head nodding? Are they pulling away? Are they leaning in? Is there prolonged eye contact or is there constant looking away? There's constant information that's coming that I'm reading off of them. There's constant information that they're body is giving them. And one of the most obvious examples I'll use of, imagine you're driving down the road and it's dark And all of a sudden, you see red and blue lights flashing right behind you, right on your bumper. What happens inside of your body in that moment? For most people, instant heart races. There's that elevation increase, some tightness as you hold the wheel. There's a pulling over, and then it's that waiting to see if are they pulling me over or are they just trying to get around me? So there's a little bit of this freeze of wait and see what's about to happen. And I don't know anyone yet who doesn't respond at some level to those flashing lights right in their mirror. And so right there, that's a more obvious way of your body is sending you information of, hey, pay attention to this piece here. I love where he said, is it really in the body? The science of this is so fascinating to me.
I could geek out over it forever.
Totally. And memories are stored at a cellular level in all of your body. We're not even talking just the brain. We get this misconception that it's just we have bad memories and it's our brain that remembers, but it's not. They've actually shown that your body at a cellular level all over remembers trauma. And it never ceases to amaze me that clients, their body will remember things that their brain does not.
Yeah.
That the body will say, hey, it's been exactly a year. And somehow the body remembers.
Yes. How many times do we hear that? Is we'll have a client show up, right? And they're activated and they say, I don't know why. And then they'll say a couple sentences later, well, it's my D-Day anniversary. And you just want to go, well, yeah, that's why you're activated. Yeah. It happens all the time. I was just in supervision for brain spotting and my trainer had just done another training this past weekend. And she said that they have people that whatever setup they're training you on, they pre-schedule this person, talk to them, and you're watching this whole session happen as part of the training. She said that all four, when she brain spotted them, had somatic memory come up that they had no cognitive memory of in their past, in their childhood. And that's what brain spot does, is it bypasses the neocortex and goes into the subcortical part of the brain where the body stores that memory. And when they did that, they all had, she says, it was crazy how all four of them did this, but all four of them remembered something in their childhood that they did not cognitively know before. And then they were able to process it. And so that's what we're talking about here is your body keeps the score. Your body remembers, it stores that. And I heard once too, sorry, I can't remember where, maybe Alana, you know this, but I heard once too, when we talk about the brain and the bodies, that about 90% of what is in the body memory, if we process it, can come up to the neocortex, the frontal, where the language part of the brain, right? But the language is only up here in this part of the brain. This does not go into the body brain. So that's why we've talked about this before. We have to do some bottom-up processing because it literally will move up through that part of the brain into the part where your language is. But you cannot put language and have that language part go down into the body memory.
Mm.
Fascinating.
Mm. That is so fascinating. And it makes me think about with brain spotting specifically, your brain is processing about 60 bits of information per second, which is quite a bit of information. But when you are brain spotting again, you're doing that bypassing, you are processing on average 11 million bits of information per second. There's so much happening. And so in clients in brain spotting sessions, sometimes only they get bits and pieces of this. And so to them, it will feel very fragmented or, yeah, I don't know why this is coming up, or I don't know where this is coming from, or this really isn't connected to anything. Side note, it's always connected to something. And we usually figure out why at some point in it. But that is part of that process because there's so much stored and there's so much moving through that that cognitive part of your brain, the prefrontal cortex, is only getting the bits of information. because they move at such different speeds. And the reason that they move at different speeds is our brain has to be able, that primitive brain has to be able to react so quickly to danger. And that was formed long before the prefrontal cortex. So that fight, flight, or freeze is so quick and so fast. There's times, I don't know if you've had this happen, but I think most people probably have, where your body is already responding to something before your brain registers something's wrong. So like you hear a scream or a car crash and you instantly jerk your eyes over to get that visual cue to as quickly as we can from that optic nerve back to that subcortical part of your brain, get the information as quick as we can on if we need to fight, flight, flee, or freeze. It gives us that information of what needs to be done. So yeah, the science around the body is beautiful because your body is made to, yes, protect itself, but your body is also made to self-heal.
And isn't that the most amazing thought? I just want everyone to sit with that. Your body knows what to do. It really does. It knows when it's ready.
Will you talk about that?
Yes.
About the body knowing when it's ready to do certain levels of healing or not ready yet?
Oh my gosh, yes. And I can just attest to this in my own experiences. I've been at this for over a decade and it's been really fascinating to watch how there are certain parts of my trauma or experiences that have come to my cognitive knowing years after. But most recently, I had an experience where I didn't think I was ready to have a lot of trauma revealed in a brain spot session or training. So it was very, very visual for a lot of people to witness, which was not what I had planned. But I had done so much work to prepare these parts to be ready to come out and speak and have a voice and be heard. And it's how I like to talk about it or explain it. It's like these are parts of the self and they have been quiet for far too long and the setting was just right. And they said, and now we're going to speak out. Now we're going to get angry and now we're going to let loose, so to speak. That was not a coincidence. That was not something going wrong. Now, I will be honest, because of the setting, because it was in a training and not with my therapist or my brain spot coach, it felt wrong. It felt like, no, I'm not supposed to do this right now in front of all these people. This is not okay. What's wrong with me? Nothing was wrong. They were ready. And I see this a lot with my clients too, where we'll have met for a good while and all of a sudden there's another memory that wants to come or another part of them starts to come out and wants to have a voice where it's been silent for a while. And I have learned over the years to trust my body so much, to not worry when I notice, yeah, that's something that's so hard, to not feel so much pressure to figure it out and heal it, but to notice it and then just really trust my body to know when you're ready, you'll let me know what happened there. You'll let me know how awful that was, or you'll let me know how angry you are, which that was the part that actually came out. Is it has not felt ready to be angry towards a certain person in my life. For whatever reason, that was the time. And it came out and it had a lot to say. And it was beautiful. It was hard, but it was beautiful. So your body knows when it's ready. My sexual trauma and abuse, that's why I started going to therapy. I'm like, okay, I need to heal this. This is harmful. It's hurtful. I had these memories and these nightmares. Guess what? 12 years later and still counting. So my body needed a decade, over a decade to do other work. It's like we use this analogy a lot, peel the layers of the onion. It needed so much time and safety and me to trust myself. I needed to trust my body. I needed to start believing my body. I've said that before here. And it took me time to do that, to believe me, to trust myself for this very injured, wounded part to feel safe enough to come and talk.
Thank you for sharing. It's beautiful. And I wrote down in big across my paper, believe your body. And it's believe it when it is ready for something and believe it when it's not ready. I love how you said that, because I will see this. Sometimes I have overachievers who are like, all right, give me all the work and we're going to do this and we're going to plow through this. And you can't force yourself or your body to be ready for any one thing. When we, and this goes back to IFS of you go slow to move fast. When we allow it to go at the speed it needs to go, when we can trust our body that, hey, when I'm ready, we'll work on this, or when we're ready, we'll work on this. And you do what you can where you are ready and where you can. And then as those layers come off, as that safety is created within your body, within your environment, within your relationship, wherever it's needed for the next level of work, it will do it. And that's one thing I'm such a proponent of doing therapy, doing group, going and doing these extra types of healing, is because all of these different things helps you know how to support your body in its healing process. There's a term called recovery capital, and it comes from AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, but we use it not only with partners who have acted out of their values, but also with betrayed partners. Research has showed that the more different types of support we have around us, the more recovery capital that's in our bank account, the more likely we are to heal. And the more that healing will be long lasting, and the more, I hate using the word quick, but the more, I'll say, efficiently that healing moves forward. And so when we do have, like, talk therapy can be really beneficial. When we have talk therapy combined with somatic, listening to your body, that bottom up work with the top down work, with having that group support and that connection, and having safe relationally and learning how to trust yourself and safe in your own body. As you build all of those different things in your circle and in your environment, it will make a massive difference in how you and your partner heal.
Yeah, I love that. And it's beautiful. And I also want to hold space for those that are scared to get in the body. One of the things that I'll say, even in a brain spot session, is what do you notice in or around your body? Because it can feel really unsafe to go in and to trust and to notice. And so I want to hold space for that. But if that's coming up for you as you hear me share these experiences, remember, I've been at this for freaking over a decade. I'm still learning and I'm still processing. And Alana knows, because I talked to her after the therapy session, we're still always have to process. But if it feels very scary or like, no, I can't notice what's inside my body, then notice what is around your body. I did this with a client and she actually noticed, she didn't go in. She chose to go around and she felt this pressure on the top of her neck, the base of her skull. And she described it as like someone is stepping on her and pushing her head down. And she noticed that sensation as she drew her attention to around her body. So it still works. That's still beautiful awareness. It actually led her to in the body. She processed beautifully. But my point is that if that feels scary, utilize that language. Take what I said there and say that to yourself. What am I noticing in or around my body? What I love about that is it invokes choice. And when you have had choice taken away from you, then this gives you an opportunity to be a chooser and to step into some empowerment. And that's really what we're talking about here, is how to become empowered. And that's choosing. So that's another way that you can approach that. But I just wanted to validate that. I promise it gets better. And if you get the help and lean into that and are willing to do the work, I promise it gets better. But it's also okay if getting in your body does not feel safe, right? Makes sense.
That piece of what you just talked about, especially with the choice, is so important. I went to a therapy session one time and I said to my therapist, I said, I am not interested in feeling today. He said, okay, what do you want to talk about? And so we had a very non-emotional thing and I did just cognitive processing. And what was so important and so healing in that specific session was I was able to voice what I needed and what I wanted. He did not push me. He just held a safe place for me. And then the next session, I came and I wore no makeup and I came knowing that I was going to cry the whole session, and I did. And that next session, because he had created that safe place for me to not do that, and he had honored what I needed, it allowed me the next session to take my walls down and go places that the week before I was not going to go. But that right there, the power to be able to choose for yourself, is so important. And I really love when you have a good support person who can help you do it at the level you're ready for. There's a tool called slicing it thinner that they use in EFT. And the whole concept is like, okay, if this is too big, like if someone says, go into your body and your brain is like, oh, put on the brakes, not going to happen. What you just talked about, Amy, right there was you sliced it a little bit thinner and we talked about around the body. Or it could be, what would it be like? What is it like to even think about exploring the body, right? We're not even doing, we're just going to talk about what would it be like if we were to think about it. You're slicing it thinner, and a good support person will help you slice it thinner and thinner to whatever it is for you to be able to handle it. That's a really important reason to have a support person. Another reason, and Amy and I talked about this offline, but I was in a training the other day, a CSAT training, and he was talking about how we have our right brain and our left brain. And in the right brain is where we hold all the emotions, and the amygdala in our right brain gets really activated when we have trauma. And so often you have a betrayed partner who wants to turn to their significant other, and they're looking for that healing and that comfort. But that person's right brain is completely activated. And so we have this activated nervous system, activated right brain, activated nervous system, activated right brain. And when you're trying to get right brain healing between each other, it can't happen. Not with two dysregulated systems. That is why it's so important that each of them has a healthy right brain that is regulated and a healthy nervous system that is regulated for them to be able to healthily attach to help them, that co-regulation, help them get their nervous system regulated, help settle down that right brain. And then together as partners, they can better co-regulate together. Mm-hmm. So having this extra support outside of yourself and outside of your primary relationship really is essential in your healing.
It'll show you what healthy feels like. And notice how you were going to say looks and you switched that to feels. Explain. Yeah. It's what it feels like. So for example, I just did a post not too long ago about an experience I had with a client where she told me all the things she felt. She was sharing her story. And very intuitively, I felt like I needed to just say one statement and three words. And it was, I believe you. That's all I said was, I believe you. And immediately, shoulders dropped. She just relaxed in her chair. And then the tears just came and she sobbed. And she, for her, had not had someone believe her story as she shared it. She had not had a response, a healthy, very validating, acknowledging response from someone. So her whole central nervous system felt this like,
oh. Can I highlight something there that you just said?
Mm-hmm.
You said, I intuitively knew. So here we are, we have this attunement between the two of you, and you in a heartfelt sense. This wasn't cognitively, I think this would be good for her, therefore I'm going to do it. No, you said, I intuitively knew that this is what she needed. And in that attunement, you were able to share that. And then she felt that. So it wasn't like you can watch a movie and see what healthy looks like. Well, maybe not from like Hollywood, but you can watch TV. You can, or you can watch a YouTube video. You can look and see what healthy looks like. That's very different than feeling it with your nervous system kicking in that parasympathetic to kick in, to slow down your heart rate, to calm you down, to tell your nervous system that that person is with you and you're safe and it's okay.
Yeah. It's a corrective emotional experience.
Yeah.
And we need these when we have had such unhealthy emotional experiences. And so as professionals, that's what we're trained to do, is give those corrective emotional experiences to our clients so that they can then learn what that feels like and help them heal, essentially, because they're like, oh, no, actually, if I go back and I share a part of my story and I get something other than the acknowledgement and the validation and what that felt like when I was with Amy, now I have two different experiences to draw from. And now I get to choose what experience is right for me. And I don't like the other one. I don't like the one that I get told that I'm wrong or that I'm too emotional or whatever. I like the one that's where someone believes me and I can breathe and I can just relax. That's healing.
It is so healing. And if both partners are truly doing their work, then we ideally will get to that place where you will then learn how to have those corrective emotional experiences with the support to have that between each other until you no longer need support to have it with each other and you can start doing it on your own. But it first needs to start with that nervous system that is regulated, with that person outside of you or your spouse who can help regulate it.
We could talk about this forever, but I'll stop because it's such good stuff. It's amazing. It works. I love it. And it's so hard. It is so hard. I do want to validate that. This takes intention, but my clients hear me say this all the time. And I just make up this statistic. But I swear 90% of the population are running around. They're not doing this. But those of you who are leaning into this work are learning how to become healthy, emotionally mature humans. And if it was easy, then the other 90% would be doing it and they're not. That's why we have people shooting people up in the middle of the streets. It's why we can get entertained with the crazy news. It's quite horrific, actually, what not feeling can lead to. So I am passionate about it. And I just want to encourage each and every one of you to keep going. I know it's hard. I know it sucks at times. You're doing work that most people opt out of. So keep going. We got you.
I want to just let that sit in silence and let that be that long silence. So when you finish this episode, before you jump to your next episode of something else, before you run back to your everyday life, sit for a minute and just sit with yourself and see what resonated with you and in your body and notice what you need and what your body is telling you you need. As always, thank you for hanging out with Amy and I this week, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
One of the most difficult and most personal decisions that I have ever seen someone make is the decision whether to leave the relationship or stay. This is a decision that only you can make. And yet there's so many complexities to this and it can feel very overwhelming and confusing. I get it. For those of you who are wondering, should I stay or should I go? I am honored to announce a new self-paced guide that I created for you to be your companion on your journey towards your own self-discovery, to your own personal empowerment as you make this decision. You'll have reflective journal prompts to help you explore those feelings and fears and the values that are most important to you, because we really don't want to let fear decide our future. The most important voice to this decision is yours, and this guide empowers you to listen, to understand, and honor that voice with every lesson learned. I will tell you this, through my own journey and deeply personal decision around should I stay or go, I realize that there is no right choice, but that I make the choice right by being the chooser of it. I will walk you through 8 different modules in this guide and you can start today. Head over to the show notes or go to shouldistayorshouldigo.amywoolsey.com. and start to find some peace and clarity around your decision. Because whether it's the decision and choice to heal, to recover, most importantly, I want to empower you to choose you. Take care, everybody.